Blog Talk Radio.
You know, every time I speak, I want the truth to come out. You know what I'm saying? Every time I speak, I want to shiver. You know, I don't want them to be like, they know what I'm going to say because it's polite. They know what I'm going to say. And even if I get in trouble, you know what I'm saying? That ain't that what we're supposed to do? I'm not saying I'm going to rule the world or I'm going to change the world, but I guarantee that I will spark the brain that will change the world.
Don't be inspired, be inspired to act. Don't just be motivated to act. Don't chase the bag, attract the bag. It's the Money Motivation Podcast. You never heard money talk like this.
Pull up in motorcades. I got a show today. It's all I'm trying to do. Hustle and motivate.
I'm your host, Montoya Smith, a.k.a. Black Socrates, and welcome to episode 4 of the Money Motivation Podcast. I got the Money Motivation Squad, a couple of fellas from the squad on here with me tonight. But before I introduce you to both of our squad members, I always like to let people, first-time listeners, know the format for this show is pretty simple. We run it as a game. Basically, there's four quarters. The first quarter, I'll ask both of our guests a question. They'll answer that, and then the other guest will ask the question. That'll be the second quarter. We'll go to a brief halftime, and the last guest will ask the question. That will be third quarter, and we always have a special fourth quarter reserved for everybody out there listening there. We hope is a treat for everybody listening. Without further ado, let's go ahead and get both of our esteemed guests, well, I should again say squad members. These are regulars, Mark Ranger as well as Johannes Harrison. How y'all doing tonight, fellas? Thanks for being on episode 4 of the Money Motivation Podcast, an unscripted view into the game of business and money. How y'all doing this evening?
What's up, Montoya?
Amazing.
What's up, Johannes?
So Mark.
Hey, man, let's go ahead and get this thing. Let's keep it quick. You know, again, we're going to get past this point, but I'm going to go ahead and have y'all introduce yourselves very briefly before I ask y'all the tip-off question for the evening to get this game started. I'll start with you, Mark, if you will, since you are the founder and CEO of Money Motivation, so we'll start with you. Go ahead, brother.
Yeah, let's jump into it. So my background is I'm a financial executive with a Fortune 200 firm. I lead a business unit in Southern California of 300 advisors and entrepreneurs. We manage a little over $20 billion under management in terms of assets. I also own the Money Motivation brand apparel company. I've been named one of the top most influential black business leaders in the country. I'm in the top 1% of income earners in the United States. I have investments in the stock market in addition to owning the business. I live in a multi-million dollar home in Los Angeles, and I love what I do. So looking forward to tonight.
Johannes, you up, brother. Let's get this thing jumped off after we get your introduction and let people know who you are as well.
Indeed. Johannes Harrison. I am the founder and CEO of Money Script Wealth Management, financial planning firm out in Texas now, originally from North Carolina. Also did some time in California. I am the co-owner of the Money Script Publishing Company. So that's actually just something we started recently here. So excited to drive that business and create more opportunities for financial literacy for everyone all over the world.
Hey, it sounds good, man. Let's tip this thing off. So the question I have for both of you, and Mark, we will start with you again. So the question is basically, there are many businesses that maintain, but often some of them, they fail to expand because they never master the concept of leveraging credit, whether that be personal or business credit. So, Mark, if you will, can you provide a specific example of when you effectively leveraged credit to conduct business, and why did you choose credit versus cash, if you will, in that instance? Because a lot of businesses are cash strapping it, if you will. So if you could just give us a specific example where you've been able to take advantage of credit properly in a business format, if you will.
Yeah, this is an interesting question, and you alluded to, I don't know how much this is ever really discussed when we're talking about business and entrepreneurship in general, because it probably is not deemed as sexy as a topic, but I think it's pretty sexy, my damn self. I mean, it's something that you need to understand to your point to be able to do things. So let me think about an example, or give an example, I should say, that that can illustrate it. So Money Motivation brand, the company, it will go into its fourth year. the middle of this month, actually, and it started in 2017. At the end of the second year of the company, we were doing about 10 to 13 grand per month in sales, and we got stuck there for about 4 or 5 months. We were stuck at that, around that margin of sales. So the first thing I had to do, I said, all right, let me figure out why or what in terms of the primary levers needed to drive more sales, because we just had benchmarks of keeping to double the sales, so we wanted to get to 25K per month as the next target. So I had to figure out what the levers were to get to that monthly sales mark. And what I determined is that with three levers, it was website visits. We needed more visits to the website. Second, it was conversion rate, how many came, how many converted to sales. And then third was the average order value or number of items and revenue per order that did occur when somebody made a purchase. So to drive those, we needed to make an investment. And that investment needed to be in marketing to drive more website traffic, and it needed to be in inventory because we had to make sure we had the inventory on hand for the inventory needed to fulfill that volume of sales that they came in, because it would be an increased volume. So in doing the math based on historical sales and investment in those areas, I determined that if we looked over a three-month period, we needed about a 30K investment, and that 30K investment would generate 75K in sales, so about 25K a month. So if we just looked at that 30K investment that was needed, three options to do it. I could self-fund it, which up to that point I had done entirely. I had self-funded the entire launch of the company and the operations of the company up to that point. Second option was to give out equity to somebody who wanted to invest in the business. I had several people who had asked me about it in starting the business and when it was going in the first 2 years. And a third option was to do some debt financing or business financing. So my thought process was this. I didn't want to give out a small piece of equity. I don't like the idea of giving up a piece of ownership or control to somebody else, even if it's a small piece necessarily, when I don't have to. Because I could have self-funded it, so that wasn't really an option. Self-funding it was on the table, but I preferred to stay liquid. So we had a proven track record of sales. I could predict that we were getting, you know, based on the what we were currently getting, that if we invested 30 grand, we could generate about 75K. So the better option was to debt finance it and stay liquid with my own capital. So I went and did two things. Got a line of credit that could be accessed monthly for working capital. And then the second thing I did was go to one of my banks that I had a relationship with, got a short-term business loan for a little over 30K. Invested that money in the marketing and inventory. And within 3 months, we hit 25K per month in sales and climbing, and we haven't looked back since. So that debt financing drove business growth. We had predicted sales. We understood the math, and we invested it in the right place. And we hit that mark in climbing at that point in particular. In 3 months after that investment was made, we hit 25K per month, and it kept increasing after that. The other thing to point out about that scenario that I think is important from my perspective is I tend to be more risk taker, more of a risk taker than most people, and I don't like money sitting idle. So I had the cash to invest it, but I don't like keeping a ton of cash. So even though I did the debt financing in this example and I chose not to self-finance, I still took my own cash and put it in play in other areas of the business and or other investments. So I put that money in play that I had to generate some type of return, where essentially now I had two potential lines of future revenue that could be generated versus one. So the advantage for me of choosing the debt financing in that case is I had two lines, myself funding money that I can use places, plus the debt financing to put in play to get some type of return.
Yeah, that's beautiful. So you are basically creating two streams by not sitting on the cash, because I would have assumed you didn't use your cash and would have sat on it and kept it liquid. You stayed liquid having access, but then you put it to work. So beautiful, beautiful example. Johannes, we're going to turn that same question over to you, a specific example when, you know, when you've leveraged credit within your business, if you will. Or
man, I appreciate it. Mark, I appreciate that. I was wondering why I didn't get that that equity option. Some money motivation. I mean, I knew you were looking for capital. But my money's not as good as the bank. Is that what you're saying? Okay.
Now you know, brother.
Got it. Got it. Got it. So it's interesting. When you were going through that phase, I was going through something similar. I believe I actually spoke to you about it. I was in a situation where I had left corporate America, started my own firm. And very similar to you, Mark, I got into a position where I plateaued. Excuse me. And the business was generating roughly about 20 grand a month. And it was literally half of how much I earned when I was in corporate America. And I said, this can't work. And so I started looking for options for growth. And just from being an individual that likes to read and has hired coaches in the past, the one thing that I realized that I needed was some outside perspective, and I needed to hire a coach. Excuse me. And so when I started interviewing coaches, the one that I found was going to cost me about $15,000. Now, simultaneously, I was in a position to purchase a practice where there was another advisor that was looking to get out of the business, and she was selling her practice, and the valuation of their practice was about $50,000. So here I was, where I'm at a crossroads. I want to grow. I want to be able to increase my revenue, and to add even more to that, at the same time, my wife and I are trying to buy a house. So, you know, I had the capital to be able to buy the home, but I couldn't both put the money into the house and be able to invest into buy this practice and be able to to invest in coaching. But I felt like I needed to do all of them, and I knew that if I didn't buy the practice, someone else would. So, again, going back to my bank account, I really only had enough to make sure that I could move my family, do the down payment. I didn't have enough money to do it all. So I started looking at options. And I did float an option to a couple of friends and said, hey, because I know they did some short-term lending. I said, hey, would you be interested in this? But they thought it was a little too much risk. They didn't really understand my business. They probably would have loaned to Mark in a minute because it was cost of goods sold, and then there's COGS, and then there's the retail aspect itself, and that accounts receivable. Whereas I don't have that. It's more built based on clients' assets and the fees that are charging on that asset. So I took the option of actually going out to a couple of banks, which is what I did, to finance those. And I am actually in the last three payments of the loan to pay off the practice that was purchased. And I'm glad that I did it, because when I purchased the practice, it was just shy of about $10 million in assets. It was $15 million in assets. It was $15 million in assets. And that turned into almost $20 million in assets. And the revenue that's been generated from that practice that was purchased is almost two times what it was when I purchased it. So whereas I borrowed money at 5%, I was able to take that revenue and almost double it. I mean, it's getting really close to doubling really soon from the revenue side. So that was a place where it was really smart for me to use the bank's money instead of my own. And I kept my wife happy because we were still able to buy the house, because I could have just as easily just, you know, persuaded her and say, babe, look, we can get a bigger house, you know, if we put the money into buying this other business. But being able to do all three, and I was able to get the coaching, and the coaching was phenomenal. I mean, the coaching, the first thing he told me was double all your fees. I was like, well, I just paid you 15 grand. If I double all my fees, even if I lose 20% of my clients, I'm still making more money. So the best way for me to get the return on this money that I just borrowed to pay you to coach me, so I'm going to do it. And I did it and never looked back. And I just hired him again to do another coaching round with him. This time I didn't borrow. I used cash to pay for it. But still, he's probably going to tell me to double my fees again, so it's going to be money well invested. So, that's probably the most recent example. And it's funny that, Mark, we were looking for capital at the same time. But I would happily, you know, got a little piece of money motivation.
You're going to keep throwing it out there. Whatever you do, you're going to work. And if you ever need some equity, you got it. I feel you. Now, we actually got a caller that wants to get in before we move to quarter two. So let's see what the caller. So the callers that are out there, you do have to press one if you want to ask one of our Money Motivation Squad members a question or have a statement. We definitely are open up the phone lines. Let's go ahead and see what they got.
Area code 404, hey, last 3-419. Give us your name. What you got for us for the Money Motivation Podcast?
Hey, Montana, this is Frank. This is Frank. How you doing?
Hey, what's up, Frank? Thanks for calling in tonight. What you got for us, bro?
I just listening. I following everything that he's saying, and eventually I'm going to have some questions. I also invited a few of my Ghanaian friends to call in and listen to it, so I believe there's quite a few of them on the line listening to you, what we can take out of this whole leveraging business credit.
No, absolutely. So, yeah, you're just calling in, shouting us out. So, we definitely appreciate that. I definitely
keep people on the line.
So, that's your people. Thank you for getting listening. Yeah, spread the word on the Money Motivation Podcast. This is what we're doing. Again, this is a unscripted view into the game of business and money. Appreciate the support. Before I let you go, did you have a question or did you just want to let us know you was chiming in?
I'm just chiming in. And
sounds good.
Just want to
you're good. Appreciate you.
Right. Just chime in, that's all. But if I do have,
I'm
going to stay on the line. So if anything pops up, I'll let you know. All right?
Yep. Come if you want to come back in, make sure you come off the one and back onto the one so that I see that you want to get back
right.
in. So come off the one when I let you go.
All right.
Sure,
let's
keep this thing moving. Yeah, absolutely. Appreciate people calling in. Anybody out there, I'll go ahead and throw the number out just in case you got people online listening. It is 646-787-1691. Again, that number, 646-787-1691. We appreciate Frank letting us know that he's tuned in tonight. So let's go ahead and move to the second quarter. Mark, I'm going to let you ask your question to start the second quarter off to Johans, and this will be moving into the second quarter. What you got for him?
Yeah, so Johans, so, you know, you were just talking about business growth, and we talked about that tied to the tip-off question on business credit. And every business that's in a growth mode, which are most businesses, they hit plateaus at different points in time, whether it's different levels of revenue or other ceilings of complexity. From your experience, either personal experience or from what you've seen, what do you believe to be or have experienced to be the biggest roadblock to unlocking that next level of growth when you hit those plateaus? Again, I know sometimes it's a revenue plateau, sometimes it's something else that's a ceiling of complexity. But is there any, you know, primary big roadblock or thing that you could identify in your experience or have seen that is the key to unlocking that next level of growth for a business that's in growth mode when they hit a plateau?
Absolutely. Great question, Mark. Great question. So I can sum it up with one answer, and that answer is systems. Almost every business that I see or even my business myself, I mean, for me, I learned not only, doubling fees helped, but what helped even more for the sustained growth was me putting better systems in place and not spending so much time doing the same thing over and over again, or spending time doing a $5 is way too low, but doing a $15 an hour task. Because being like yourself in the top 1% of all earners, that's not $15 an hour work. So by the lack of having a system that can be repeated that someone else can do, not having that system in place causes CEOs like myself, I was in that boat where I'm doing, you know, mundane task like changing a client's address. I got no business changing a client address. I've got no business even opening accounts. The hardest work for me is to get the client to say yes. Once that is done, there shouldn't be any too much more work for me to do with setting onboarding that client, but I found myself doing a lot of those tasks. So once I was able to put those systems in place, and there's a phrase, and Mark, you might have showed it. Jay Papasan, I think, is the author of the book. The One Thing? Is that the One Thing guy? Can't remember his name. Anyway, there's a book called The One Thing. And,
yeah,
and that's one of the things that he talks about. We're having systems and... Say again?
Oh, go ahead. I think it's that's the Keller Williams guy, I think. But go ahead. Yeah, I know you're talking
Keller Williams. There you go. Yeah. So, and he has this chapter on touching things one time. Touch it once. And I found that there was a lot of things I was touching multiple times. And that's just sucking time where I can be out getting more sales, getting more clients. So I think no matter where you are in the business, But especially if you're someone that's trying to take it from six figures to seven figures, like I'm in the process of doing right now, trying to go from six-figure business to seven-figure business, it's all going to be about systems. Is there a repeatable process that your customers or your clients, whatever, that they experience? How do you make that process so that it's easy and repeatable and less thinking involved, and so you can spend more time working on the business and being a thought leader and being the entrepreneur and coming up with new strategies and new ways and spending less time in the business opening new accounts? So, yeah, my answer would be systems, hands down.
Now, that's a great answer. Let me jump in and ask a quick question. Either one of you can kind of answer it in reference to the systems. So I definitely hear of business owners here in Atlanta that are kind of trying to figure that out. In a sense, is there particular people that you, in a sense, go to? Let's say you're the visionary and creating systems is not your strength. Who do y'all typically look for to help assist? Is it like organizational managers or what? Who are you looking for if that's not your strength? Because that's kind of my scenario in my business as well. Like, who do I find to help me with that? In a sense, as the visionary versus somebody that's able to set those systems up to help you? Who do y'all look for?
Yeah, I'll jump in real quick and just tell you, that's what I hired my business coach for. I mean, that's how he was recommended to me from another business coach that I worked with. And when I was talking about the problems I was having, he said, "You've got systems issues. Let me get you with a guy that will help you set up systems." And that's what he did. I mean, there's things that happen now inside my business that never happened 2 years ago. And it's almost plug and play. Like, I mean, and everyone gets the same high touch, high class experience, but it's just laid out. And my assistant, actually, matter of fact, I could fire my assistant tomorrow. I wouldn't do that, but I could lose my, let's say she takes another job or decides she wants to go start her own business. I could plug and play someone with minimal training as long as they have a certain, you know, level of education and you know, that sort of thing, and they can understand, if they understand certain parts of business, I can plug and play. All I do is here, follow the system. So yeah, I think it's about finding someone that is good at it and then saying, "Hey, teach me how to do it," or you know, or you pay them to help you set your systems up, and then just don't touch the system, you know. And I made that mistake early on. I thought I was smarter than the system, and I'm not. Every time I try to do something, a quick example, I have a scheduler where it's a link where my clients can go and they click the link and they pick the time that works best for them in my schedule. All I have to do is make sure I take time off the chair. Like this time right now, nobody can choose this time on every other Tuesday because it's already assigned to you. So the likelihood of having a double booked appointment or that sort of thing goes down to like zero. Okay. Every time I get into a text message conversation with a client and they're like, "Hey, how about we meet next Tuesday?" And I'll say, "Great, I'll put it in." I forget to put it in. When what I should do is use my system. Yeah, absolutely. Right. Next Tuesday will probably work. Here's my calendar. See if you can find a time that works for you. Then it's in my, and then I'm done. I don't have to go touch it again. I don't have to go and put it in my calendar. It's like, no, I put it on the client. Here, you put yourself in my calendar. So, and that has caused my appointment see ratio, the amount of client people that I see, went from about 60% to 90. I see 90% of the people that are in my calendar. Just because I created a system. I created a system that said to clients, "Because you didn't get your to-dos done is not a reason to reschedule our meeting. We will have the meeting. We will get it done in the meeting." 90% of the people keep their meetings. I had 30 appointments on my books this week. One of them is rescheduled so far.
Wow.
So, and that's like,
actually, it looks like Frank's trying to get back in. Let me see what he got. We got somebody wanting to get in. So let's see. Pretty sure that's Frank. Frank, that's you, I believe. Go ahead, brother. What you got for us?
Yeah, that's me. I was just waiting for the business credit, leveraging the business credit part, because I actually have a few folks that may have some questions regarding the importance of the business credit and how to leverage it.
All right, fair enough. So it looks like we got a quick – let's see if we can answer that a little bit just from the understanding. Mark, if you will, I'll kind of throw that at you. There's definitely a difference between personal credit and business credit. Some owners never understand that. Maybe you could just give a quick briefing on how that is different and how you leverage it, if you will. I think that's what I understand him to be asking.
Okay. Well, yeah. So in terms of business credit, I mean, the way it's different is this. First, I guess that's the first question. You can, in big buckets, either self-finance, obviously, and if you self-finance, that's money coming out of your own pocket. That's easy to understand. You can finance by getting equity financing, and equity financing means that if I start a business and I go to Johannes and ask him to invest in my business, he's investing in that business to receive in exchange a piece of equity or ownership, and now he owns a portion of my business. So as my business grows, his percentage of money and investment that he invested in also grows, and depending on how much he may own, he may also have some level of control or say in what goes on. So that is a more risky proposition because, again, if it grows, great, he earns money. If it doesn't, then he loses money. But there's ownership. That's equity financing. Debt financing is a loan. Just like you get a car loan or get a mortgage, you're on the other end of that equation. Okay, so you're taking a loan for a business, so to speak, because you own a business, and you're taking credit from a bank in order to fund some type of business, working capital, or transactions, or whatever the case may be. A lot of different type of debt financings you can take. You can do SBA-type loans. You can do traditional bank loans. You also have government funding. There's a lot of government funding from the standpoint of business financing that you can take. So those are probably the three big buckets of debt financing. And, you know, each of them have pros and cons or restrictions and limitations, as well as qualification measures that you have to take. But those are the different layers of debt financing. And then based on what you're trying to accomplish, you would decide whether self-funding, debt financing, or equity financing would make the most sense. But the message earlier when we did talk about this is debt financing can drive business growth if you have the right terms and can understand the math and have predicted sales so that you know whatever you take on is going to generate the right amount of revenue to be able to pay back that loan payment you have every month and still have money available to have working capital and turn a profit.
Now, that makes sense. So basically it doesn't change whether you're using, in a sense, a personal loan or doing a basically business against your business, if you will, because I think there's definitely different credit scores based on, you know, you personally taking a loan. But from what I understand, business loans typically can be more if you have a good business credit rating, if I understand. But for the most part, proposition doesn't change, is what I think I hear you saying. Is that fair, whether it's you, yourself, but maybe am I correct that the business loans quite often can be more if you have a good business credit rating, if I'm saying that correctly?
Well, yeah, the business credit is based on the strength of the business, but you can get business credit even if you don't have a ton of history with a new business. I mean, yeah, they'll check your personal credit, but because you have, let's say, an entity or because you have an operational business, many times you can still access business financing. I don't think a lot of people know this, but you can access business financing even if you don't have necessarily a long-established business credit line or credit history. It's better if you do. And then the second piece of that is, as your business continues to grow, to your point, Montoya, you can access higher amounts of business credit outside of what you have on your own personal credit because they're doing it against the strength of the sales or the equity of the business, and you can use that to leverage to drive growth rather than using your own money.
Nah, sounds great. Johannes, before I go to halftime, any thoughts on that, on the business credit, specifically leveraging it? Any extra thoughts on that? You feel like, you know, Mark Hamlin,
yeah,
that's fine. We'll go to halftime.
Yeah, just really quick, I would just say that I went through the process personally. So I was able to establish a business credit score through Dun & Bradstreet. So you can do it for free. I did it for free. It does take longer. Can you pay Dun & Bradstreet? Yeah, I could have paid them $500-$600 and they would have set the process up faster, but I did it for free. I didn't want to give them any money. Once that profile was set up, I was able to start borrowing money in my business name that did not require a personal guarantee from me. But as time went on and I used those credit lines and paid them off, my first credit line was a gas card. And I would just get gas on the gas card, but it was in the business name, no personal guarantee. And then I got a Office Depot card, and then I got a Capital One card. And next thing I know, I've got companies offering me $10,000, $20,000, $30,000 worth of lines of credit on my business without even asking you anything about the personal. So that took time. It took 3 years to get to that point. But I think I started with just registering the business with Dun & Bradstreet so I could start a profile that then some trade lines, is what they're calling the business world, so some trade lines could be assigned to that credit profile so I could show the world and lenders that, hey, I've got a business that pays its bills on time.
Wow, that's beautiful. Actually, we got another caller getting in, y'all, so let's go ahead and jump to this caller before we go to halftime. Area code 973, last three, 218. Give us your name, where you're calling from, and what you got for us this evening on the Money Motivation Podcast.
Hi, I'm a friend of Frank. He invited me to come and listen to you guys. My question is very simple. International projects, one of the areas that I'm sort of interested in with about 20 engineers from here is to do a waste management project. How do you get funding to do a project of that magnitude, since the Ghana government, for instance, does not do no sovereign loan guarantees? How would you go about that?
I don't know if that's your area or not, but any thoughts, I guess, just to try to give it a shot. It's not my wheelhouse.
I mean, international deals. What type of money are we talking about in terms of what you would need to raise?
The project, the company that will be doing the project is from Michigan. We're talking about close to $100 million project, but it's going to take over the whole country because the waste management is a big, big issue for them. They can't solve it, and it's becoming a national environmental hazard. And so the government is willing to allow the investors to come in, but they will not fund it as a sovereign guarantee. And that has been my point where I'm stuck. So I'm trying to figure out how to go about it. So when Frank called me, I said, all right, let me listen so that you guys can sort of give some ideas. But the project itself is a $100 million project.
Yeah, I understand. Yeah, I'm not as familiar with international, you know, type deals in that light. It sounds to me that would involve some type of either government involvement from a government contracting standpoint or private equity, let's say, who might get involved. But I'm just not familiar enough with the international deal like that to be able to give you some good insight. Johannes, I don't know if you have any suggestions.
I've come across it. I would look into a company called Seed Invest, S-E-E-D Invest, I-N-V-E-S-T. They help companies raise capital from the ground up, and they have a huge network. I'm in it. So they send me deals all the time where they're raising anywhere from, you know, $1 million to the hundreds of millions of dollars for different projects. So they are a company that I think could point you in the right direction, because it sounds like it's going to take a collective of different funds in order to make it happen, and there may be several different tranches or levels that you have to go through to get to that big number. But I would start with Seed Invest. I've seen some deals like what you mentioned show up on that platform. So that's where I would begin.
Sounds good. I missed your name, but what I will do, I also have a point of contact for you that probably could point you in the right direction just based on how much international business he's done. So I will pass that name along to Frank, who I know, and hopefully get y'all connected. He's a retired contractor, used to put up buildings and things of that nature, but he's done a lot of international business. So he probably at least points you in the right direction with who to get contact with. So I'll make sure I pass that on to Frank. Thanks for calling in this evening.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Yep, no problem. All right, let's go to a quick halftime, and we'll keep this thing moving. We'll be right back listening to Money Motivation, an unscripted view into the game of business and money.
The Money Motivation brand currently exists. It's a success in lifestyle clothing brand primarily, and it was created because we saw the demand, and it was created in 2017, and we saw the demand for the self-made modern entrepreneur, business leader, high achiever. There was a gap in a prominent streetwear brand that really embodied their journey. So I wanted to take that concept and create a clothing brand that could embody that, with a mission that's very simple, which was to inspire a life of excellence and freedom, to promote independent thinking, hard work, taking risks, having a relentless commitment to what you do in a never giving up type attitude. Those are all hallmarks of the brand. And the product line consists of premium T-shirts, outerwear, headwear, accessories, canvas prints, and the like. But there's also a media aspect to this, which dovetails into this podcast actually being created, where I really want to help people be successful in business and build businesses and wealth and be able to enjoy it while they're here, as well as build it for future generations. But it's about being able to live a life of autonomy, and that's been a big part of my motivation to be in the financial industry and also have a brand that can represent that. So the hope is this can influence people to think differently.
Welcome back to Money Motivation. For all of you out there listening, you are privileged to go to moneymotivation.com. That's where you can actually see this amazing clothing brand line that, as we have our special guest, Mark Ranger, the CEO of Money Motivation, on with us this evening. He's a part of the Money Motivation squad. With that said, for all of you out there listening, you can enjoy a 20% discount at moneymotivation.com by simply going to the site and putting in MM Podcast. MM for Money Motivation Podcast at the discount options on the site. Amazing wear. Definitely love wearing the Money Motivation brand. With that said, we're going to keep this game going. And so, if you will, Johannes, we're going to turn around and get to the third quarter. What's your question for Mark this evening?
Yeah, so Mark, my question is, I know you don't like giving up ownership, but what's the number? What is the number at which you would consider a sell or a sale, excuse me, of the Money Motivation? I mean, Damon John's hopping on this call right now and said, hey, I like everything it is, and he's willing to give you a number. You know, how do you think about that when it comes to selling a business, or do you just plan to own the business forever?
So I, one way or another, I would never, well, I shouldn't say never, not never. I wouldn't sell completely out, meaning I would still want to retain some shares, still want to retain some level of ownership, most likely do some type of transition over time if there was a majority ownership type scenario. So right now that would be the goal. However, I absolutely believe that when you start a business, you need to build it with the intent to sell it. So, yeah, for me, that absolutely is part of what I have envisioned, so that there is the option, then I can make the decision that, you know, at that particular time. Right now, the target is $15 million. So I would not consider selling this business until it hits at least $15 million as an equity valuation. That is the line by which I would start to consider whether or not this would be something that I would begin to take on or consider, let's say, a majority ownership or some other piece. Now, things change over time. You never know what could happen. But if you would ask me that question directly, then yes. I mean, that is about the line that I would begin to consider it. But as I stated, I would still want to retain some ownership. But I also believe that, you know, you build businesses with the intent to sell them. So it's not out of the realm of possibility from a, you know, equity transition perspective for that to be something that's pursued.
Do I have time for a quick follow-up question?
Yeah, go ahead, please.
Two follow-up questions, or one question, two parts. What multiple are you using for $15 million?
So that's
okay, got him. Look at him. Real talk.
Yeah, that's the equity valuation, barring the multiple. I haven't even identified what the multiple would be. Gets
okay.
to the volume.
Okay.
Else, for that is the minimum equity valuation that I would consider.
Okay, so let's pretend it's a 5x multiple. So that means you got a $3 million. Let's pretend we're doing sales. $10 million. So you're doing $3 million. How much is too much interest in the essence of debt and taking on debt? How much would be too much interest to take on one times your annual volume, your annual sales in debt? So at what interest rate would you say I wouldn't do it?
You mean to take on debt financing, you mean?
So if a lender walked up to you today and said, hey, I will write a check for one times your sales. What's the highest interest rate that you're not willing to go over to take that deal?
But I'm missing something in your question. You mean this person writing me a $1 million check as a loan? As a debt financing loan? As a debt?
Debt financing loan, no ownership. If you have $1 million in sales today, he said, I'll write you a check for $1 million.
Got it.
At what interest rate would you say I'm not doing that deal?
I would want that to be in the 4% to 6% range. If it's over 6%, I'm probably out.
Got it. I like it. It kind of goes back to the multiple a little bit. So that's a good answer. I appreciate that.
Yep.
No doubt.
And if I can ask a quick question before we go to the fourth quarter, if you will, and that's just me listening and learning and, you know, loving what I'm hearing. Give me at least a small insight into why 6% is the number. Again, not even understanding all of this. I'm just being very sincere with y'all. But I've watched this happen in the movies, if you will, but I don't know, you know, again, I'm not been in this position, but why does that number make you say that's too much? As you said, I'm out, as you said.
Yeah. It's driven by a couple of things. One is just driven by, you got to look at the competitive rates that currently exist or historically have existed. Right now, obviously with everything going on, they've been lowered for a certain easing of certain things. But prior to this, if you looked at a standard working capital loan that is in a competitive space, it normally was around the prime rate, which is the prime rate that's already established across the board, plus about maybe 3 points. And prime was somewhere in the 3% to 4% range, maybe a little more, but in that 3% to 4% range. And then if you add 3 to it, that's around 6%. So my first thing is, competitively speaking, I would not go over that because in the broader marketplace, there's not a market for that. And so why would I go over that? Go over that amount.
Right.
So part of it is using that. The second piece of it is just my own experience with brokering deals like this and what has traditionally happened in brokering a deal like that where somebody's getting some type of financing to purchase something. I'm brokering the deal. What have generally been the rates that have either broke the deal or made the deal? And that 4% to 6% range has generally been consistent.
Makes sense. Appreciate that. Let's go ahead and get to the fourth quarter. Again, the fourth quarter is a special quarter. We dedicated to the late, great Kobe Bryant. We share some words from Kobe Bryant. Both of you take a listen, and we let you just whatever the cut evokes, and we'll start with you, Johannes, after the cut. You just tell us, you know, based on what you hear, what you think about the cut itself.
Come better at it.
Yeah.
Oprah told me this when I first decided to build the studio, and I was asking how Harpo came to be. And she said, well, when she was doing her deal for the Oprah Winfrey Show, she was re-upping her deal. And actually, the first contract she made, she said, well, don't pay me up front, just I want to own a percentage of the show. And so they gave it to her. Now, at the time, there weren't any black women hosting the daytime talk show, right? So it was really new. And she said, you know, Kobe, if they believed that the show was going to be successful, they wouldn't have given me that.
Yeah.
They wouldn't have. In their mind, they're thinking, oh, we got to steal. We don't have to pay her. We can take this money and move it over here. This is great. You know, it's going to be a flop. We'll be successful. I don't know. At least we get diversity on TV. It's fine. And all of a sudden, it's,
Uh-oh.
We're in trouble.
We shouldn't have given it away. Yeah.
Opened up Pandora's box, right? So now you come back for the next deal, and it's like, you got to have to give me some more ownership.
Yeah.
You're like, dang it, here. And then ultimately she, you know, came to owning 100% of her show.
Yeah.
You know, and so people think it just comes out of nowhere.
Yeah.
You know, you got to, like, obsess over it for a while, and then it kind of pops loose.
Absolutely, yeah. You had to plant the seed well before to see the fruit.
Yeah, and you got
to
water it all.
Your thoughts.
Man, it reminded me of the story about the cat from Disney, who I was just trying to Google and find him. But he was the Lion King actor from the first one, the one that did all the music. Oh, here it is. His name is Jason Weaver. There we go. Jason Weaver was in a similar situation. He turned down $2 million up front for his Lion King songwriting and singing, and instead took the long money. And let's just say it's worth a lot more than $2 million. So it takes a lot of guts to do that. I mean, it does. And you've got to be confident in yourself and confident in your product and your company to be able to say that you think that the sum of all the future revenues are going to be a lot more than what they're willing to write a check for today. So, I mean, kudos, hats off to Oprah for pulling that off, Jason Weaver for pulling that off, and anybody else that's in that position that's willing to say that that's willing to bet on themselves and bet on their future, because it really puts you in the biggest sense of control. I'm in a deal like that right now. I did a production deal, and I decided to take the forever residuals on everything that comes from not YouTube, but all the music platforms and movie platforms that are out there, Spotify, et cetera. And it was a little painful because I had to put some money up, and the first year there was nothing. But I mean, the time like right now, we're expecting a big check because everyone's been at home downloading. I mean, we saw when we got a little report that was showing how much what our downloads were. It didn't show our money, but our downloads. I mean, literally the spike was off the chart. They didn't even have a number for it yet. So
nice.
So now it seems like it was the best thing in hindsight was to take the long money instead of the guaranteed payback up front. I was like, nah, pay me for the rest of my life. So, you know, as long as that asset exists, I'm getting checks.
Love it. Mark, we'll let you close us out with your thoughts on Kobe's cut.
Yeah, three thoughts came to mind for me. Because that, you know, that the crux of that conversation was taking an upfront check versus the longer money, you know, which would be a percentage of ownership over time and residual over time, a money that would come in. But also the number one thing that comes out of that is ownership. That was a decision about ownership equity, which to Yoas's point is a much harder decision, but truthfully in business, equity is the real game. That is the real money play. Equity is not top line revenue. It's not profit that you're getting in any given month or any given year. It's equity. That is the real play. And that's what that resonated with me, is that's the decision she was making. Secondly, not all dollars are created equal. You know, you take some upfront money versus the longer money with equity, those dollars are not equal. It's not equal money. And so considering that, making a better decision to take the longer money and the equity, there's an understanding around that. And I think being in business, we always have to keep that in mind. All money ain't good money, and not all dollars are equal. And then the last thing that hit me was don't let anybody tell you what you're worth, because part of trying to take you out of the ownership equation and talk about some upfront money, or I'm going to cut you a check for this, or I'm going to give you this for your whatever you did, when you actually, it would not exist without you. As somebody trying to tell you what you're worth, when I think being in business and owning businesses, you always have to know what you're worth. You got to know what your brand and your product and your service and what you bring to the table is worth, and you can't let anybody else define that for you. And ownership is the way that you constantly can capture that and stay ahead.
Nah, beautiful. Well, with that said, fellas, let's make people know how they can. Yoas, I know you have a podcast and you're talking about your downloads. So if you will, let people know how they can get more of what they got this evening from you, if you will.
Appreciate it. So the Money Script Podcast available on all podcast platforms. We just added 6 new platforms last week. So don't tell me you can't find it. I did get a tweet like that recently. They found it. So, yeah, the Money Script Podcast, hit me up there. Also, on every other Wednesday, I host a free workshop, Investing 101. So if you're trying to learn how to just navigate the markets, where to start, should I buy stocks, mutual funds, ETFs, whatever, every other week, every other Wednesday, 3 o'clock, as soon as the market closes, that's the central time. So 1 for my Easterns and whatever time it is for you guys on the West Coast, is that 4 o'clock, 5? I don't know, whatever time it closes for you. So 1 o'clock, I did it backwards, 1 o'clock on the West Coast and 4 o'clock in Eastern. If you go to the Money Script on Instagram, you can register for free. We have a lot of fun on that call, and a lot of people learning some great things.
Sounds amazing. And Mark, since we do have you, definitely let the people know about the discount once again. Since, again, Mark's the CEO, he'll show up most shows, but we got a whole squad behind him that talk just like this. Again, you have not heard money talk like this. So if you will, Mark, any information you want to give out, as well as tell them about the discount before we close out tonight's show.
Yeah, Mark, so what's up on that summer line, man? What's up on that summer line? It's getting hot.
Hey, it's in the works. It's in the works.
Okay.
Tell you, it's some heat coming. It's some heat coming. But look at
I can't wear these hoodies anymore, man. I need.
I got them coming. I got some slides too. We're gonna make it happen. So look, Money right. Motivation brand, moneymotivation.com, hottest premium streetwear apparel out there for the self-made right now. You got to go check it out. And again, as Montoya mentioned, we got a 20% discount code. That's MM Podcast. So double M Podcast. You enter that in at the discount code at checkout. That'll get you 20% off. Guaranteed, you will be happy and satisfied and suit up and feel like you're ready to go get it with this gear. So moneymotivation.com. Secondly, you can get us on Instagram at moneymotivation.co, moneymotivation.co, also on Facebook. And then my Instagram is Mark, M-A-R-C underscore Ranger, R-A-N-G-E-R, in terms of contacting me directly or following on Instagram.
Thank you for trusting me with hosting this show. I'll let people know I'm every Saturday morning with the Mental Dialogue Talk Show, 10 a.m. to 12 p.m. on the same format, Blog Talk Radio, or follow me on Facebook at Mental Dialogue or IG at Mental underscore Dialogue. Mark, if you heard in the beginning, if you were listening from the beginning, that brother's out in L.A. Again, fourth quarter is dedicated to a one Kobe Bryant. We start and close the show with another legend, unfortunately, who we lost, Brother Nipsey Hussle. Just a kind of a cool way to end the show as a tribute to Mark living out in L.A. Just making the show cool. Other than that, game over. Catch y'all next episode. That was the Brady Watts bass remix to Nipsey Hussle's Hustle and Motivate.